Hello, and welcome to the Customer Onboarding Podcast brought to you by TaskRay. I'm your host, Jamie Cole, Chief of Staff at TaskRay. And on each episode, I'll sit down with customer onboarding leaders to uncover the leading strategies, playbooks, and secrets to ensuring customer onboarding success within the first 90 to 120 days. I'm so excited for you to join us and listen to these industry leaders as we learn together how to be customer onboarding gurus. Well, hi, Shanna. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Thanks for having me. This is great.
So you currently serve as principal for your own consulting firm, Van Winkle Consulting. Through your practice, you've been able to bring your hard-won experience, having served as a product and customer leader at companies like VictorOps, CA Technologies, and others. Today, I'm really excited to discuss your perspective on why customer success teams should prioritize onboarding during early customer success efforts. So let's start talking about that. I love to dig into your experience guiding early stage CS teams towards success. In particular, I know you're a strong advocate for early stage teams prioritizing optimization of onboarding as a primary objective. Mm-hmm. In your opinion, why do you think solving onboarding is crucial for teams to get right early on?
Yeah, I think onboarding is, there's the whole concept of nailing the landing. We all appreciate the impact of first impressions, right? So there are lots of statistics out there about the impact of early positive experiences in terms of customer retention, growth, referenceability of customers. We remember things, right? We remember that first experience and it really becomes part of our nervous system around a relationship. And then conversely, the strong impact of early negative experiences we all can relate to. It takes a lot of work to correct a bad first impression, and you can accomplish a great deal by hitting it out of the park early on in a relationship. So I think in terms of the why it's so important to invest in onboarding early, beyond customer sentiment, I believe the most important reason is it's a starting point for the customer journey, ensuring that customers are getting maximum value out of your solution quickly. Right? We want that as quick as that time to first value. The sooner that happens and the sooner they recognize, ooh, look, I'm getting what I had wanted and needed out of this product, the better. We all know how it feels to adopt software and try to patch things together on our end without proper onboarding, right? So not only it can feel really frustrating to take that approach, but it also leads to suboptimal workflows that our customers will patch together on their own. They'll generate tech debt that they aren't aware that they're generating as they scale their adoption. So I found, even just from like a hard metrics perspective, that investing in onboarding early greatly reduces risk down the road. And that's, I can measure that in terms of, you know, reduced support cases, reduced support escalations, reduced product feature requests, increased customer sat. So those are all pretty hard metrics that you can expect to see improve if you get the onboarding piece right.
Great. So what are some of the areas where you see people overlooking things they should be focused on?
Yeah, I would say with onboarding specifically, one of the big, this is sort of an area of confusion around customer success. If onboarding is being managed out of a CS team, it may or may not be, right? Sometimes sales handles onboarding, sometimes support, sometimes it all goes through a professional services team. But in a customer success environment, in particular, I think the most common oversight I see is over-investing in relationship management. And relationship management does not equal value. So your CSM needs to deliver value directly related to the implementation of the product in their customer's business. The relationship is a means to an end. It's not the end. And so I sometimes see organizations staff up a CSM function, and those CSMs are checking in and calling and you know, with the best intentions, but they're not set up to actually deliver the tangible value around, I want this product to start delivering X for me, and they're not doing that. I also see, sort of related to that, organizations often over-investing in high touch, like the high touch onboarding experience, right? You're Jamie, you have 10 accounts and you're gonna call into them and be really attentive. And then under-investing in automated onboarding. So onboarding can be provided in a range of ways. And one could be real-time training, onboarding sessions, personalized outreach, but particularly in the SaaS environment, but by no means limited to the SaaS environment. Onboarding can be anything from like in-app workflows, right? Like supporting me as I adopt the product. Hey, Shanna, I noticed you haven't done X yet. Did you know you can do Y? That's a really elegant way to engage customers that requires no human one-to-one contact. Documentation can be used extensively, being able to send people onboarding documentation that is elegant, clear, simple to use. And then digital customer engagement, which is, you know, a big hot area right now, right? Being able to track a customer's onboarding progress and sending them just-in-time recommendations to keep them moving down the path. So I often see people think onboarding, I need a bunch of people calling customers to make them happy. And in fact, that can be a place where it's very expensive and it often doesn't deliver the results you're looking for.
Great. So how would you suggest that customer onboarding team leads advocate for the prioritization of onboarding when there are so many other competing functions within the CS space?
Interesting. I mean, certainly the metrics that I just spoke to a couple of minutes ago, those are pretty easy to justify investing in onboarding early, because if you don't, it's going to lead to, you're going to pay it back down the road, right? The math is pretty easy for me as a CS leader, that if I look at the pull on my team's capacity with and without onboarding support, the math is going to look way better if I provide it upfront. Otherwise, they're going to end up handling lots of escalations. The support team's going to get hit harder, and my team's going to end up spending a lot of time just managing customer sentiment. So, so I think from that area, it's a pretty, I find it's generally a pretty easy decision. In my experience, onboarding often gets moved to the top of the backlog in part or entirely due to noise in the organization. So sales engineers start yelling, support starts yelling, product starts yelling, customers start yelling. And I mean, hopefully you address it before it turns to yelling, but you're going to start to hear noise in the organization where sales engineers are spending too much time handling post-sale onboarding. Support is getting hit with a level of need from customers that they can't handle through their ticketing process. Product is getting pulled in a bunch post-sale, and none of those are optimal. And so you're going to hear, and then obviously customers most of all are going to be disgruntled, and you'll hear about it. So I find I don't think I've worked with a single client or in my own experience where there's been a lot of resistance to investing in the onboarding space.
Okay, that's great. So this one thing that you said just last few minutes was so interesting to me about how CS teams sometimes overinvest in the relationship and not the value. Do you think that has anything to do with the fact that a lot of some companies have tried to transition account managers to be CSMs? Or what do you think leads to that?
Yeah, I mean, I think a couple of things. I think part sort of early customer success was, I think, largely glorified account management. And so, yes, that was a really common theme was, oh, wow, our enterprise account salespeople are getting pulled in too much post-sale and they need to be out landing new logos. So we're going to bring people in who basically do what salespeople do post-sale. And we're going to put them into more account management type roles. There is an absolute need for that. I have pretty strong beliefs around this now after watching different models across so many companies. There are times where relationship is front and center. And I see that being absolutely appropriate when you're working with senior buyers, you're dealing with enterprise level rollouts. They're spending a lot of money with you. They're rolling out over thousands of users potentially with a SaaS product. There's a lot of complexity around the environment it's being implemented in. There's a lot of process complexity and human complexity beyond the technology. Those are reasons to have somebody who I wouldn't say relationship centric, but I would say account centric or solution centric. And sometimes that is absolutely appropriate. I just think that often when people think about, oh, I need a CS team, they'll start by staffing a couple of customer success managers who are relationship managers, and that's a setup.
So one subject, which is always a hot topic with other customer leaders, is the diversity of backgrounds when it comes to staffing. Some teams are predominantly technically inclined, leading to stronger relationships with the product team and faster implementation, while other teams do seem to be the relationship-focused teams coming from a professional services or customer support background.
Yeah.
So what are some unique benefits and pros and cons of technical teams? Like if you're more staff in that direction.
Yeah, I mean, I always try to avoid the "it depends" answer because it's not very interesting when I'm trying to learn. But if there's some good content behind the "it depends," hopefully it stands. So it really does depend. I mean, in my experience, technically centered post sale teams, whether they're called customer success or not, are absolutely appropriate when. Almost the opposite of what I just described as that sort of account or solution oriented role. It's absolutely appropriate when it's a highly technical product. There's a technical buyer. It's maybe a point solution versus something that's having a big impact on process and people as well. And it's just, if there's a lot of technical complexity, then I'm going to advocate that, yeah, that you start by hiring fairly technical people to manage the onboarding process for that product. So that can be absolutely the right thing. And very often you'll find those types of teams being staffed out of customer support or product, right? Because you're taking people who know everything about that product and they can troubleshoot and they can customize and figure out workarounds and interact with product and engineering. And that's absolutely appropriate for certain products. And then there are others where that is not as central to what you need to be providing from a customer success perspective. Does that answer your question in part, Jamie? Okay.
Yes, it does.
I could go on a lot about the importance of having, you know, people who are both broad and have some depth and the importance of also having a team approach versus having you get one person. Ideally you have a team approach so you can pull from some combination of deep technical expertise as well as more of the solution orientation.
So that leads me into my next question, which is what is the optimal mix? Because we've already talked about relationship-centric teams and what the pros and cons of that are. But so if you've got that on one end of the spectrum and the technical-centric teams on the other end of the spectrum, how do you find your sweet spot?
Yeah, I mean, I think, first of all, it's going to evolve over time. So, I mean, I've come into four companies during the startup phase and gone through acquisition with all four of them just by chance as an employee. And the reality is the needs of customer onboarding and customer success evolve pretty dramatically during that evolution from an early stage startup up through acquisition or IPO. So early on, you're going to need a different blend. And sales is going to be providing more of that support. Support's going to be providing more of it. And then as that blend is going to fluid, I would say. So I can give one example at Victor Ops, where I was a VP of customer success. I started out with a team that was very very product centric, and we initially had hoped we didn't even need a success team. Initially, we didn't have a real sales team. It was pretty much a plug and play. I could adopt it as an individual user. It was for incident response. I could download it and be up and running with VictorOps without any involvement beyond what I could learn about it online. And that worked for a while. And then we started to get bigger implementations of the product across broader groups of people. And there started to be more complexity, both technically as well as just managing these larger accounts. And so it became more and more important that CS, customer success, become a quarterback position, pulling on capacity across all these different teams to make sure that the customer had an orchestrated customer experience. So I've seen that evolve over time. So that blend, you know, you might start out with two pretty technical CSMs and then realize, oh, we're starting to acquire enterprise accounts. Let's bring an enterprise CSM in who has more expertise around that type of engagement, and then how do those two types of teams work together? And so it's very much an evolution.
It's always interesting when you have people who have very different perspectives. So relationship folks see the world in one way. Technical people see the world in a different way. And so how do you coach leaders on actually integrating those teams, even if they're not sitting on the same team, but integrating them to be able to work together the way you were just describing.
Oh, interesting. I mean, gosh, I would, that's interesting. I'm like that's what makes leadership art versus science. Certainly.
Yeah.
I tend to view customer success, since that's the lens we're looking through, as much more of a value stream through the business as opposed to a standalone siloed function. So really what's most important, I believe, in investing in customer success is really looking at customer lifecycle management. So you're looking at the whole organization and what the customer experience or journey looks like, regardless of what function they're interfacing with across the org. And that workflow is responsible of that entire value stream. And there are things you can put in place from, making transitions really clean between sales and success, doing regular account reviews as a cross-functional team across sales, success, support, product, doing things like meeting on a regular cadence to talk about product requirements and what each of those field-facing teams is hearing and seeing in the field, and having really constructive dialogue around the trade-off decisions, given that product can only build so much in a given increment of time. So I think there's a lot you can do as a leader in terms of putting the right ceremonies in place for people to come together and communicate and collaborate around the customer. And the more that you do that versus sort of handoffs and throwing over the wall, the more empathy there will be for people's unique perspectives. And then that can be a real asset to have the more, relational centric project management view, as well as the deep technical expertise.
Great. So I'm going to talk about handoffs for 1 second, because that's always a really hot topic. What do you think you need to do to have successful handoffs?
Communicate a lot. Document once you get bigger. Yeah, I work with a lot of clients who are highly successful. It's interesting. There are kind of two reasons I end up working with clients. One is we have a churn problem, but actually more often it's we are growing so fast that we need to figure out how to scale what we do, because what's gotten us to this milestone is not going to get us to the next one. We've got to formalize. So I think there's a lot that can be done from a handoff perspective in terms of agreeing, having clean working agreements. And clean means we actually are told we're bought in, we understand them, they're clear, they're specific, and we're revisiting them on a regular basis and recognizing that working agreements evolve and need to change. Having processes documented and having real enablement around them, making sure those processes are co-created by the people in the organization who do that work. Having regular meeting cadence that are high value, that are focused on actually making decisions and moving things forward for our customers. I think there's a lot that can be done in all of those areas.
Great. So I want to switch gears a little and start and talk about onboarding as a paid service. Another topic it's trending right now is whether or not you should charge for customer success, and in particular, whether onboarding services should be offered as a premium service. What is your opinion on whether or not teams should charge for customer success, and in particular, whether onboarding should be seen as a premium within that model?
Yeah, this one is definitely a hot topic. And I don't know, it'll be interesting how many of the viewers have seen the TSIA 2019 State of Customer Success Report. But one of the big themes in there was that monetizing customer success tends to improve every key metric around retention, expansion, and NPS, because it generates explicit commitment from customers and it deepens customer engagement, right? So it's sort of forcing what you and I talked about at the beginning of our conversation of, you want to delight your customer out of the gate, and this requires your customer to engage in a process that allows you to delight them, as opposed to setting them up for, no, we'll go it alone and we'll let you know if we need help. By the time they recognize they need help, they're already frustrated. There's already been a cost. So yeah, that was a really interesting, fairly, I think, provocative finding from that report. So I don't know. I mean, I would say it's somewhat like the staffing model. I think it's going to depend to some extent on the complexity of the product. I can give an example at Rally Software. So I used to work at Rally, and it's an agile software product. And we learned quickly that selling agile software without active coaching and training on agile practices was a recipe for failure. It just didn't work with customers. You can't become agile by adopting software. So we had extensive paid onboarding engagements with our customers that included training, coaching, and consulting. So pretty broad professional services engagements. And these organizations were transforming the way they built software. So they were not implementing a point software solution. They were transforming. So paying a premium for onboarding was a no-brainer, given the size of the investment they were making. By contrast, I have several clients right now who have a pretty simple self-serve onboarding experience, which has worked really well for them up to this phase of company growth. There's no need to have a paid onboarding experience at that point. As you start to sell more complex enterprise deals, onboarding becomes more complex, as much because you're selling into these complex and IT organizations, and you have more human beings adopting the software, and inevitably you're going to have more complexity. And so my experience is generally, as you start to sell bigger deals, it becomes more reasonable and realistic to expect that there would be some level of investment in the onboarding experience, like financial investment.
For the people who are charging with the larger or more complex deals, how can they position it as value add to the customers?
Yeah. That was my job at Rally Software. So I was a solutions consultant working with customers pre-sales and then staying with them for the first part of post-sale. And my job was to make sure that our customers were successful when they made a big purchase. And so I believe you need a sales team that is enabled to be able to speak to why that investment will return 10x. It should be a no-brainer, honestly. Again, if you're selling it for a solution that requires significant onboarding, that should really be a no-brainer, and that's something you should absolutely be enabling your sales team on. Customers are going to pay for things like live. You know, I want a named person who I can reach out to. They're going to pay for it if it's bundled with the product. They're going to pay for it if you have really attractive professional services offerings. I mean, there are a lot of ways around packaging this and pricing it that also can make a big difference in terms of how palatable it is.
Yeah. So where should the line between essential onboarding for customer success begin, like the basics, and premium, mm-hmm. something that you might be paying for above and beyond?
Yeah, I'm going to put that in that that's art, not science. I would be naive to say there's any hard and fast rule. I mean, certainly I would say, anything that can go through customer support, like your basic support flow, not premium support, but basic support, you're going to provide that for every customer. If a customer's having problems accessing your technology or having trouble with the basics, that's going to be available. Any content that you have documented in a knowledge base, any access to a community, for community support, certainly. They're always going to have their sales team, and that's what they'll go back to, which is another reason organizations end up choosing to invest in something more formalized, is that the sales team is getting too much time pulled by customers who they're gonna find their answers, right? Yeah. It's just a question of how efficiently you're providing that to customers.
Are there like a few core things in onboarding that you know you're going to have to deliver whether someone is paying or not paying?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, and I was going to say I could continue with answering your last question, but you took me there, which is, I work with a lot of clients who have a customer success team with CSMs who are assigned to accounts and none of that is paid. I mean, that's very common to think of customer success as the payback on your CS investment is not through revenue, like revenue for the service. It's payback through increased retention, through renewal rates, and it's also measured through increased expansion. So customer success being the team that interacts day-to-day with customers post-sale and identifies places where they realize the product could be used more broadly or within other groups within the organization, and they're handing that back to sales. So it's not uncommon to have a free customer success organization, and you're providing QBRs and you're providing check-ins every couple of weeks and you're providing, ad hoc, I'll jump on the phone and look at your instance and try to help you work through problems. That's pretty common in my experience still.
Hey listeners, we'll get back to the show in a minute, but first I wanted to ask you a question. Is your handoff process between sales and customer success repeatable? scalable, and optimized around your customer outcome? Could your process use some work? Check out our webinar, Mastering the Post-Sale Handoff, available on our website at taskray.com. Let's get back to the show.
Let's talk about playbooks, because that's another hot topic. Everyone has playbooks, and they're great, but what are some key playbooks that teams should use when the needs of their business and the needs of their customers are in conflict?
Can you give me an example of what that would look like? Like a need meaning cost versus value?
I think so. I think what it comes down to is like, and I've talked about this with a couple other guests, whether you're monetizing onboarding or not, there is a cost associated with your onboarding resources. Mm-hmm. And there are some customers who are really going to want to lean on those. So you have to be measuring how much you're spending on onboarding. And then I think that's what leads people to decide we're going to monetize this.
Right.
But before maybe you've been that explicit about it and you're realizing they're asking for more than we can give, from a cost perspective or even just like a resource perspective, how do you really communicate that to the customer in a way that does not turn them off during the onboarding period?
Interesting. Well, that's a benefit of having a paid offering, because that becomes one opportunity to call a spade if they're starting to rely heavily on whether it's support or a customer success team or sales or products. We're going to feel that. And that's one role of a CS leader, is to be able to engage in those discussions with clients. Ideally, again, it kind of goes back to that value stream concept of, I think there's a difference between a customer that's just difficult. We've all had customers who are just difficult, right? Yeah. And there are times you have to call a customer and the end of the discussion might be that you're quote, firing a customer. I don't like that term, but certainly there are times where you just recognize like this solution does not seem to be meeting your needs. And the amount of time we are all investing in trying to make that work doesn't make sense for either of our businesses. Right. So let's regroup. We're going back to the beginning of the sales process. Let's re-qualify, right? So those are outliers. I find that's very much the exception. It's once in a blue moon in my experience that you have a customer who is just taking advantage, for some reason they're out of whack. Otherwise, if you have a value stream set up with a competent support team, success, professional services, sales, any combination of those, and you have a product team that's really customer centric, you're naturally going to be able to meet your customers' needs if you have those things we talked about: clean working agreements, documentation, regular meeting cadence, strong communication. You're going to be able to do it through a team effort. I think where you get into trouble is thinking they're silos, and it's like, that's not our problem. That's success's job, right? That's not our problem. Product should have fixed the product, right? That's where it really starts to break down. Whereas when you have a truly customer-centric organization, I don't find that to be a problem.
Okay. So let's talk a little bit about how onboarding would interface with product, and what's an ideal state, and where are there some areas to be cognizant of to not trip up?
Yeah, I mean, I think if you're doing any type of in-app onboarding, there's an awesome collaboration to happen between product and the onboarding team. And I think probably all of us have experienced versions of sort of a B2C in-app onboarding experience. And when it's done well, it's amazing. I just feel, I'm like, they're in my brain. Like, I just clicked on this and now they know that I'm wondering this. And then they're directing me here and they're feeding me this context, and this is amazing. And so if you have the type of product that lends itself to that type of experience, then the onboarding and product teams are going to be really tightly aligned, right? Because the onboarding team is going to be consistently bringing feedback to product on what's working, what's getting traction, where would it be helpful to have more in-app support, that type of thing. If you have enterprise software and there's more complexity and implementations, or if you have a non-SaaS offering, the thing I feel most strongly about, and I don't know, this goes a little bit beyond onboarding specifically, is the importance of having strong relationships and agreements between the field teams, which I think of as those four I keep listing: sales, success, support, and professional services, whichever of those you have. So the field team and the product team. And I find that is very often broken, not because people are unhappy with each other or bad people or have trouble with relationship. It's just by design, there's a tension that can really really easily develop between those two entities within an organization. So when I was at VictorOps, we actually built something called a Customer Voice Council, which is maybe people think that's more like a customer advisory board. It was totally internal, but we actually built a whole process as a field team. So the leader of myself is the leader of success, support, sales leader, and we came together on a cadence with members of our teams who were on the ground in the trenches with customers every day. And we were doing this every quarter where we would come together as a field team. Product was there to listen and ask clarifying questions, but this was really a chance for the field team to talk about what are we hearing, what's causing the most pain from a product perspective, where do we think we could get the most wins if we invested more from a product perspective, where are we having the most risk and churn, what's causing us the most pain from a support perspective. And inevitably, you end up with a list on the wall or on the whiteboard of 15 features that are all important across those teams. And then the really rich discussion starts around, okay, what if we built this and we didn't build that in the next quarter? Ooh, what would be the impact on churn, win-loss, sentiment, support volume, things like that? And what we committed to doing was once a quarter, we would do our own trade-off discussions as a field team so we could hand product a single backlog of what we believed were the most relatively important features and why. And we handed it to them with data. And I think that's something the onboarding team is absolutely an imperative part of that process of backing it up with the data so product can make data-informed decisions. And then we can go back and enable the field team on how to talk to our customers about our roadmap and have context to share with them around what we're building and why and what we're not building yet and why. And I can tell you, customers don't expect you to build everything, but they expect you to have answers. And right. So I find that that is one place where not just onboarding, but the broader field org with onboarding as a central part of that can really do a great job of collaborating with product as opposed to, whomever screams the loudest, right? Yeah. Like I know that product person. I'm going to go walk by their desk every day and tell them we have to build X.
Right. And then the product people start hiding under their desk.
Or yes.
Conveniently have their headphones on all the time.
And I've been that product person because I had one rotation running product and I was like, this is maybe the hardest job in an organization. Incredibly challenging.
I agree with that. I was running product at TaskRay last year. It's a really hard job.
It's very challenging.
So obviously we're in a really, I would say once in a lifetime business conditions right now with everything that's going on with the pandemic and the economic fallout. Do you have any different perspective or different advice that you would give to people who are just getting started and standing up a customer onboarding or implementation process and team because of everything that's going on?
Yes, interestingly, it's been busy for me right now. As I mentioned, there's sort of two reasons that people engage me. One is I have a churn issue. The second one is we're scaling rapidly and we need to figure out how to scale how we engage customers. The vast majority of my work has been on that second side, which is wonderful. A lot of healthy, fast-growing tech companies out there right now. And now I'm getting calls of like, we're still growth-oriented, but right now we're actually trying to mitigate risk. So what can we do to weather the storm with our customers? And is there anything we can do from a CS strategy perspective in particular? obviously, there's definitely no silver bullet for this, right? I'm seeing with a couple of my big clients, they're just seeing a shave off across the board. That's inevitable. You're just going to see people are going through every line item in their budget and we're just going to dial back anything we can temporarily. There are some things that can be done certainly around risk identification and risk management. That's sort of one theme. And that's things like using health scoring. And I'm working with two clients right now to just get a really rudimentary health score put in place so they have better visibility. These are companies that otherwise just haven't gotten to that stage of maturity, but suddenly this is a higher priority, which is if we can look at customer behavior, even if it's just four variables, it's, how many logins, how many people have provisioned the seats that they purchased, how many support cases have we had, how much client engagement have we had? Anything that you have visibility into that you can generate a health score from, that can be really helpful right now for leaders who are trying to forecast what's happening with the business. especially if you can track things like changes in usage patterns, like, oops, people aren't logging in as much anymore, and we're seeing this, right? Then you're in a position to really predict, like, okay, we can, at a minimum, we can predict we are likely to lose this client, and that's going to help us make decisions about what we do over the next 2 to 3 quarters. So I think that's one, is anything you can do around using data to get better visibility into your install base. A second thing is having the field teams gathering on a regular basis, trying to make this as efficient as possible, because you don't want to take your field team away from customers, but coming together and doing state of the customer reviews so that we're learning quickly what's happening during COVID, how are customers behaving, and using specific accounts to learn quickly together as an organization. And that kind of leads to another theme that's coming up, which is there anything we can do with our product offering to make it specifically valuable to our customers during this time? Can we offer them something that's going to lessen the pain? Is there something about our core functionality that's going to allow them to, weather this storm better because of our software? If we have a software product, can we do anything with discounting? Looking at anything that would be an offer to customers to keep them loyal and engaged.
Sure.
So those are some of the themes that are coming up.
Great.
Yeah. Lots of companies doing, yeah, it would be cool if we could figure out a way to crowdsource, like every company in the world is sitting down right now having this discussion. Wouldn't it be cool if we could like crowdsource all of it? It would be like,
well, because I mean, especially in SaaS, I'm sorry, like TaskRay, one of the great things about recurring revenue model is there is some predictability in what your revenue is going to be. And so when new business goes down dramatically overnight and you're not planning it, you still have a little bit of an insurance policy, but customers really become like gold during hard times.
Yes.
And it's really an eye-opening exercise to sit down as an organization and say, what could we be doing better for our customers? Mm-hmm. Yeah. And especially during this time, because they are the thing.
They are gold. It is true, right?
Yeah.
Yes. I know we talk about companies that are customer centric and companies that aren't. Everybody is at the end of the day, right? Because you realize like we are nothing without our customers are everything.
Yeah. And I mean, we're still seeing interest in new business, but it's very clear that most people are really kind of trying to wait this out to see what direction it turns. And so the new business stuff seems like it's going to be in that sort of flux for a couple months at the bare minimum.
Sure. So and there's potentially an opportunity for companies like TaskRay, where as unfortunate as this is, people are being furloughed or laid off right now. And companies are trying to figure out, how do we automate things that we have previously relied on humans to do? Yep. And to our earlier discussion about having high touch CSMs, this is a time where companies are saying, okay, if we have half the capacity in our CS team, what can we automate using technology?
Yep. Yeah.
It's an unfortunate, I by no means would wish for anyone to lose their job during this time.
No.
But it's a reality.
It is a reality. And even being able to run processes remotely. So that's one thing that we have seen with a lot of our customer. And I think when you're talking about fast growing SaaS companies right now, a lot of them are ones that are allowing companies to go from overnight of in-person work to remote rework. Because my goodness, the business would come to a grinding halt if you couldn't do that. So
absolutely. Yep. And then technology is such a central part of that.
Yeah. So I always ask this as my last question, but what is the best onboarding experience you've personally gone through or have seen in the market, not including a company that you've been a part of? And what makes it so special?
I'm thinking of two different. Can I give two?
Yes, people always give kind of one. That's the other thing. It's just everyone has like two or three.
That's so funny. Yeah, well, because I think of I've been in a position of adopting enterprise software, right, as a business leader, and in that case, I'm thinking of one experience I had. I had somebody who was holding my team's hand, so they were proactively tracking our progress. They were telling me what to do next. Really nice, right? So nice when people, these are the three things that are going to happen this week. I knew exactly where my team needed to be engaged. We're going to need your CSMs this week for X. We're going to need your ops person this week for these two things. Here's the data we're going to need. Showing me metrics along the way, providing technical guidance, providing best practices guidance. So really that high touch enterprise customer success engagement model. I love that when that's done well. And I've had a couple experiences with that. And then for non-enterprise, like B2C type software, which we all have, we use like 50 of them, right? It's the all in app one that I described earlier. I just love that experience of feeling like the software knows me. Yeah. That's an incredible, I'm in awe of that when that works elegantly. Cool. So I can give more example of what that feels like, but I think we all kind of have a sense of what that experience is.
I agree. It weirds me out a little because I'm like, they're tracking and they know that this is where someone is having problems. And so I'm not the first one to have a problem here. They're not doing anything weird by tracking.
I know. I think early on I have felt the same way. Yeah. Where you're like, who's watching me?
But it's helpful because I'm like, great. Now I don't have to like go look up that thing and try and Google it or ask a friend. It's right there.
Or schedule a call because I want information right when I need it. I don't want it a second earlier.
Yeah.
And I don't want it a second later either. And so when you can get that timing perfectly,
right?
Which is kind of what I'm describing with that enterprise experience is when somebody has an onboarding process, it's just so clean that they can tell, they have it just, it's like the perfect Gantt chart, right? Where there's like, there's no waste in it and it just flows perfectly. That's really elegant. And I think for in-app, it's just knowing right in this moment, this is when this person would read this. I'm never going to go back and read it after that. So feed it to me right when it's critical.
Yep. That's great. Well, Shanna, this has been such a great discussion. Thank you so much for joining and appreciate your time.
Thank you so much, Jamie. This was really fun.
Thank you so much for listening to today's episode. If you have questions, comments, or want to share your top learning from today's episode, tweet us at TaskRay or message us on LinkedIn. If you're enjoying the podcast, please leave a review on iTunes and let us know your favorite part. Until next time, you've been listening to the Customer Onboarding Podcast, brought to you by TaskRay, the customer onboarding success company.